On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina Dianaroga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
1580 The Bet. This is 1580 The Bet.
WJFK AM Morningside.
And WJFK HD3 Manassas. Always live on the free Odyssey app. DC's home for wagertainment.
Are you ready?
Are you ready?
It's time to laugh, to win, and to live the thrill of the action.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. What the hell's going on out here?
No idea what's going on, but I am excited.
Every pick, every play, every game-changing moment. This is You Better You Bet, brought to you by BetMGM on Westwood One Sports.
Hour two, JJ and Fracastos, You Better You Bet, presented by Westwood One Sports, right here from our friends at MGM, BetMGM, of course. This guy spent a lot of time with me. He's killing it now over at The Ringer. He finished up his World Cup coverage. Now it's Ringer Wise Guys, gambling, all on Twitch, podcast, wherever you get it. Anthony DeBundo. DeBundo, welcome in. Where do we stand right now? We feeling good about our NFL prep? You feel like you're 80, 90% of the way there? I know it was a busy summer for you with the soccer, but August 25th, set the scene. What can you tell the people? Feeling good? I do not hear DeBundo right now. He's probably giving us a point of brilliance, but he's muted. I can see him talking, but I can't hear him. Still can't hear him. I love when we have to troubleshoot on the fly. It happens. Like, I'm usually notorious for this. So it happens to me on a regular basis. It looks like DeBundo is getting straightened out right now. So got to make sure the mic is there. Oh, I hear you loud and clear. Welcome in. What happened to your mic? You didn't charge it?
It was plugged in the whole time. I guess there was just a false start. I'm not sure.
Finicky. It's like my life in a nutshell. Very finicky. You feeling good about your NFL prep right now or no?
Yeah, it's fun because I start the year with this big empty spreadsheet. And as I slowly fill out the other sheets, you slowly see the power ratings populate 1 to 32. And then when I finally finished my last division, which was the NFC South this year, save the best for last, JJ. It feels like a very cool thing. And, you know, there's some tinkering and plenty of changes that will go on between now and then. But I have an opinion on all 32 teams one way or another in some form or fashion. So we're ready to go.
I like the sound of that. You're wearing a Green Bay Packer hat. You have been a big proponent of Jordan Love, as have I. LaFleur, who's a quality regular season head coach, but a whole lot of playoff demons. And I feel like they're a team that nobody is giving any love to throughout this summertime period, AD, because the Lions have the last place schedule. They were everybody's darling a couple of years ago. There's Caleb Williams. There's Ben Johnson in Chicago. And some people are looking at them as the team that's going to go and take the next step. Are you as bullish as you've been in years past on the Packers? Are they undervalued? Or is this a year they're staring a last place finish in the face?
Yeah, you know, I came in kind of looking at the Packers very high level saying, okay, Josh Jacobs is in legal trouble. Dobbs goes away. Wicks leaves. The offensive line doesn't look very good on paper. And I think with Parsons out, it's very easy to draw the angle of like Green Bay is kind of mediocre. But then when I went through my power ratings and I ultimately settled on what this offense is just fully right now, I still think this is a very, very good offense. And I think they've been able to scheme around offensive line personnel issues long enough that you have to trust them in this situation. You have to believe in what this offense can be and has been. I mean, this football team was 9-3-1 last year. They lose their last few games of the season. They crumble the division. But think about the absurdity of some of their losses down the stretch. And I do think there are real questions, especially early, about the defense and what that looks like without Micah Parsons. But, you know, Jonathan Gannon, a defensive coordinator who's maybe not that highly regarded, But I'd argue he's never had as much talent as he does now. Certainly he didn't in Arizona. Not since he was in Philly did he have talent. And they were a very high floor, maybe questions about the schematic ceiling defense. But that's okay for this Green Bay team. This Green Bay team doesn't need to be a great defense, because every single year that Matt LaFleur has been the head coach, they've been a top 11 offense. And every single year they have had found a way to create consistent explosive plays. And with Reed, Watson, and Kraft coming back, I think that should be the case again. Of course, injuries can derail them. You can say that about every team, right? But currently constructed, week one offense, there's not 10. I'm taking over the Green Bay Packers.
Would you bet the Packers at plus 240 to win the division?
That's where it gets a little trickier. You know, I like their over 9.5, but this division is crazy. I mean, genuinely, I don't have very much of a gap between 1 and 4 in my power ratings. I understand why Detroit is the favorite because of the schedule. The of the four teams, they certainly got the last place schedule, which in the NFC with a couple of basement teams is very important and could be a leg up. But I also think Detroit arguably has the lowest floor of all four teams. Because what do we know in the post-Ben Johnson era of the Lions? We don't know a ton. We know they have major defensive holes in the secondary. We know they have an offense that took a step back last year from being, you know, a top group and got exposed schematically more consistently than they ever had before. So I look at a Lions team and I say, I understand where if they play up to what they can be, and if you just take the last 2 or 3 years and you apply it to their current schedule, you say, yeah, Lions are the favorite to win the division. That's true, but I think people are maybe underselling the downside risk of the post-Johnson era continuing to be a little bit underwhelming and them not really ever finding that next play caller scheme elevator that Johnson was, and them ultimately ending up as an 8 or 9 win team yet again.
I know you're a big fan of this. You like to look at teams that won a lot of close games the year prior, and you can't expect that to be the case again. Right. So Chicago and Denver are two teams that I'd look at where I'm like, they're pulling games out of their rear end on a consistent basis. If one is going to come back to the pack, if you had to sell one of those two teams, Chicago or Denver, is there one you're, dare I say, lower on?
I would probably say that Denver has the higher ceiling as a result of their defense being considerably better than Chicago's. And because we know what the missing piece is there, new play caller, new receiver one with Waddle coming in. You can see the world where if Bo Nix is just mediocre and they're an average offense and a very good defense, that team could compete in an AFC. I am not sure or convinced at all that Chicago has the personnel to be an actual contender at the top of the NFC defensively. Like if they may win 11 or 12 games, and I think if anything, the market might be a little cool on them win total wise, just because I think this offense with Johnson is going to be great. But I just think when they get into a playoff setting and they're not going to be able to rely on turnovers against bad teams as much, you start to see all the cracks in this defense, and then they get exposed as a result of that. And look, a lot can change between now and January, but that's kind of where I see the Bears, maybe a higher floor because of the offense, but a lower ceiling because of the defense. Denver's an interesting case too, though. I will say this about Denver. Not as high on Kansas City anymore either. That defense last year got to play a lot of backups. And we know the personnel is very good. We know the pass rush and the corners are very good. And we know the scheme is consistent. But putting together 3 elite seasons in a row is very rare for a defense. And this year, the schedule looks a lot more beefed up than all the backups that they got to play last season.
My guess, you're on the Chargers to win the AFC West. Is that accurate?
Correct. Yep.
I bet them to win double-digit games. Didn't get involved in the division market. They win double-digit games with Harbaugh every year. I mean, they've done it each of the last 2 years. I wouldn't bet against that.
With bad offensive play callers, I'd argue. This year, they bring in Mike McDaniel. I think this is the group that could take the leap, and I wouldn't be surprised in week 7 or 8 if we're saying that the Chargers are the best offense in the AFC. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I think it's on the table. I think Buffalo.
Are you on them from like a? So let's take it a step further, though. You like them to win the division. Would you suggest to the audience Herbert MVP, Charger AFC Super Bowl tickets are worth having or no?
Herbert MVP, I saw dipped under 10-1. At that number, it's probably not great, right? Relatively, because we are still talking about a quarterback that would need to take a pretty sizable leap in efficiency, right? He's never had one of those Burrow-esque or even Stafford-esque or May-esque seasons, right? I think May is a better bet for MVP at the same price than Herbert, because May has demonstrated elite offensive efficiency and adds AJ Brown to the mix, and there's continuity. Whereas with Herbert, it is still a new scheme. It's a little bit different than what he's used to. There isn't that 1-1A receiver that really puts this offense over the top. I think it's going to be a scheme upgrade that will make them a better offense. But we're still dealing with, again, new OC, new DC for the Chargers. So there's real questions about whether it takes a little bit of time to come in and produce at the level that I think this offense is capable of doing in the McDaniel offense.
All right, you're doing all these division previews. I'm sure there are at least one or two plant the flag AD takes that he has for the 2026 season. You could take this any which way you want, over, division, future to win a Super Bowl. I'm really giving you an open forum on this. I'd prefer one positive, one negative, though, so I am throwing a little disclaimer just to be that guy. You could take this any which way you'd like. Now that your research is basically concluded, give me two plant the flag NFL takes for 2026.
I am selling all of the Giants stock that anybody bought because of the Harbaugh hire. And I have a lot of doubts about the consistency of this offense this season. I think a lot of people think, the run game could be decent. I think you could sell me a story where the Giants are a pretty effective run game. But even in the dart good games, a lot of it was third down. A lot of it was chasing explosive plays vertically. I'm not sure the personnel is there offensively to consistently pull that off long term. And I think the defense on the back end, to me, as much as we always love this pass rush and we talk about that, and you know, the defense against the run should be better with Reader coming in and the rookie, you know, linebacker. Like, you're like, all right, the run game should be a little better, but I have questions about the scheme and I have questions about the back end. And the schedule, you know, like, it's, there's a lot of good quarterbacks on that schedule this year that could probably just pick apart that secondary. So I have a lot of questions about the Giants. I don't think Harbaugh is some massive upgrade in the year 2026 anymore, because he's not giving you the schematic advantage. And I'm not really sure what the innovation is of this Giants offense that's going to surprise me this year. So I am a seller of the New York Giants, JJ. I'm sorry to say it. I know you're not a Giants guy, but you are in New York, so.
Well, I want the Giants to have a relevant season for what it's worth. You're right. I'm not a Giant guy, but it's better for business if the Giants can go and give me a season into December. I will say, though, I think you have to look at one of those two teams within the NFC East and think they're going to bottom out. That's probably how it will work. I think Washington more than likely ends up being that team that bottoms out, because if Jaden doesn't play or is three quarters of what he was, if he's closer to what he was last year, I think that team has disaster written all over it. I think the Giants are going to be like a 7 feisty win team. I am out of the playoffs. I get why you're on the under, but I do think they're improved, and I do think coaching matters for what it's worth.
Look, like, all the metrics would say that this team should be improved, you know, relative to the 4 wins they had last year. Yes, they are a better team than that. I just can't get to the 8 that you would need to get to the over.
Fair.
On this win total. I think it's a long way up to 8. And look, like, they did get one off Philly last year. I'm a little bit skeptical of Philly, and I think Dallas also. Like, this division is not
Cowboys,
as cut and dry.
I'm on it. Cowboys, I love them this year.
I think everybody's on Dallas, yeah.
That's the problem. It's a little frightening.
I think they'll win 10. I have major questions about, like, playoff ceiling with their defense, but
I don't even win a Super Bowl. Hey, I don't even win a Super Bowl. Just cash my plus +200 to win the division. That's what I need. And
it's moving your way. Market's moving your way on that one. I've seen plus +170s out there recently.
Okay. So you're out on the Giants. Who you in on?
I mean, like, we're speaking relatively here. I'm in on the Miami offense.
I think you're just trying to butter me up a little bit here.
Better. This is like a take I have, and I think that again, this is relative to market. I'm not saying that the Miami Dolphins are going to go out there and win 8 games and Malik Willis is going to light the league up, but I think they're going to be an annoying underdog to play against, a running dog who is consistently in games because the O-line's really good and the offensive scheme run game is good and Willis can use his legs and they're able to consistently stay in games, where they're going to be the annoying, you know, 7.5-point dog who covers a bunch of games and overperforms their market rating, basically, is my whole thing. Where it's like, this is, again, not a great team. Their defense is going to be a problem. But I think Miami scores a lot more than people are expecting this year.
Well, and those wide receivers that nobody knows, we'll see if those Green Bay guys who have had a reputation for finding receivers out of nowhere can do it with the likes of Caleb Douglas and Chris Bell and whatever veteran middling guys they brought into the team. I just hope Willis can play and give me a watchable product week in and week out. Got to get to a ton of baseball with you. Your Phillies are on fire, dude. They're trying to chase down the Braves in the NL East. They have a pitching rotation that would be frightening for a team like the Dodgers to play if Wheeler's right with Sanchez, with Lizardo. I know you're a Philly guy, but I also know you can be very fair, balanced, and reasonable and rational when it comes to your takes. Are the Phillies the biggest threat to the big bad Dodgers in the National League?
I would still probably put the Brewers there, but you know, we've just seen Milwaukee have these playoff issues before, and I do wonder if their high floor, low ceiling offense, their, you know, being really good with runners in scoring position and not hitting homers strategy translates to playoff baseball when the long ball becomes much more king and much more prominent. Honestly, I think it's actually the Cubs, but I'll go that the Phillies are very much capable of doing that to the Dodgers. The Phillies have lost a bunch of games to the Dodgers in the last couple of years, mostly on stupid stuff, whether it's errors, base running miscues, you know, fielding, various other mental mistakes, some questionable bullpen management. The games between Philly and LA last year, even in that series, were very competitive. I mean, three of the four games were decided basically on the last swing or the last at bat. And so I just don't think the gap is that big when the Philly is able to pare down its roster and focus on its best 16 or 17 guys. And right now, I mean, in terms of just the math on it, there's very much a world where Philly does catch Atlanta. Atlanta's rotation is in trouble. They only have two guys pitching well at the moment. Philly, meanwhile, with Nola and Painter kind of turning their seasons around on the back end of the Philly rotation, all of a sudden, they're probably the deepest rotation outside of New York in the league. And you're like, wait a minute, like Philly could swipe this division, grab the three seed, and set us up for maybe another Philly Dodgers NLDS series. So ultimately, I think the NL is much more open than people think. And I am holding a lot of Dodgers no World Series that I'm hoping to cash before we get to the World Series this fall.
So I'm in agreement with you on that, but I want to throw this at you. To me, if the Dodgers get to the National League, there's no way they're losing the World Series. I know they should have lost to Toronto last year, but they get there. But if they get there, dude, and they can sniff it, that team with all that pedigree, with all those Hall of Famers, they're four wins away. They're getting it done. Like, to me, if they get knocked off, it's the Phillies. It's the Cubs. It's in this early stage of the postseason where it's like, boom, you get them. Like, if that team can taste it, man, I can't see them losing the World Series. I just can't.
I got a lot of – I mean, we'll see how Glasnow looks tonight. His last rehab start was really, really, really good. You know, he gets a tough matchup tonight with Atlanta's offense. Elder, who looks like he's on fumes, he goes up against the Dodgers, so that should be a good test. In that series, they're playing three here. You know, Glasnow and Snell, to me, look like they're pitching really well. And that changes the calculus for the Dodgers because then they go into the playoffs with their four aces and it's like good luck and maybe Ohtani's in the bullpen. I don't know. But there are so many other holes on this Dodgers team that people are kind of overlooking. Like, they've been a bad defensive team for 2 months. Mookie Betts has not hit most of the year. The catching situation,
dude,
without Will Smith.
Tucker. My goodness.
I mean, the back end of the bullpen, Diaz is now on the injured list, which felt like a you need a breather list. Yeah, we're like, there's a lot more holes than there were last year. Last year, it was a very obvious hole. It was like the bullpen stinks, and we think we can mitigate that by pushing some starters back there. And Sasaki gave them a couple good weeks, and really, they should have lost the World Series. But they were able to hide the bullpen just enough and have some clutch hits. This team has like three or four different holes that I think can be picked at. Again, maybe the starters are so good it doesn't matter, but that's a dangerous way to play in a playoffs. It's a massive favorite. I like the underdog that has great starting pitching. I don't love the favorite that has great starting pitching and what has actually been a league average offense since July 1st.
Crazy thing about, can I throw this one at you? They have some work to do to make the playoffs. Work to do.
But
the American
Seattle
League, the way. No, I can't.
Oh, not
I already
Seattle
bet them to win it. No, and I'll tell you why. Because I have them to win the AL West from like Memorial Day weekend at plus money. And I was like, wow, this is such a great bet. I'm so proud of myself. Then they had like a good 3 weeks. They moved past the A's and then the Mariners went in the absolute tank. And I'm like, wow, now you could have gotten some crazy numbers. And yes, the AL West is so bad, it's there for the taking. But I want to mention,
I still think they're going to win it for what it's worth.
I don't think that's crazy at all. Houston just fired their GM. They stink. And their schedule's a joke, right?
The bundle, they have 17 Seattle games against the Rockies, A's, and Angels in September.
Yeah, they're
going to go 12-5 in those games. Yeah.
They'll make up the ground. I totally agree. But I want to hit you on Toronto. I know it's been a weird year for them. Yes. I think if Toronto, here's my case. If they get this sixth seed, they'll play the AL West. I like my chances, even if it's Seattle. Beat them last year. If they win that series, AD, they're going to get the White Sox. I know the White Sox have been a fun story, all the walk-offs, all the young kids within their lineup. I think Toronto beats the White Sox. And then I'm staring at like a 35-1 ticket in the American League. And like, they've played the Yankees tough. They've played great against the Red Sox. And they don't play great against the Rays. But at 35-1, I think they're worse bets to make, dude.
I'm looking now at this day. This is such a, it's a crazy race, honestly. I mean, I'm looking at Fangraphs projections. Fangraphs right now, as in the AL wildcard race, hypothetically, Astros 80.8, Mariners 80.4, Jays 79.4, Orioles 78.6, Twins 79.4, Tigers 77.5. So like six teams within two games of each other. Could be an all-time race. My issue is, where's the ceiling on this team in the playoffs? I mean, Vlad Guerrero still hasn't hit a homer right at Rogers Center in like a year. And there's just no power whatsoever. At a certain point, you have to have something in your offense to kick into a playoff gear. And I don't really think Springer and Vlad are showing me that this year. So I'd almost rather take a team with more hitting upside. And I mean, I keep saying Seattle because we at least know what it looks like. I mean, you know, Cal had a big game last night. Maybe he's finally healthy. Maybe he's snapping out of his year-long funk. I don't know. But I just don't think the offense is very good. And I think that's going to be a big issue when they get in the playoffs and face quality pitching.
Fair pushback. Very fair pushback. Okay, before we say goodbye, U.S. Open. I know you love it. You going? I'm sure you'll be there.
I'll be there. Exactly when, I'm not sure yet, but I will be there.
Multiple days, or is that debatable?
The current plan is Sunday and then Monday or Tuesday, depending on the schedule. And then I'll be there for one day.
Do you like going to the earlier matches? I assume that you do.
I do, yeah. I'm a sicko in that way. You know, give me a grounds pass and let me, you know, print out the schedule and circle the three or four matches that I absolutely want to see that day and kind of just maraud around the grounds. I mean, at this point in my tennis viewing fandom, I have seen, you know, all the top guys before and women, and especially pre-round three or four, you're just not getting a lot of competitive ash matches. So the best way to do it is the grounds pass. But the problem is other people have figured this out and have now, you know, the grounds pass prices are way higher than they used to be. But yeah, I'm excited for the Open. It's, for my money, the best sporting event of the year to go to attend in person. I think it's nothing beats it. And I can't wait for it.
Who are you betting? Men's, women's side. Anybody stand out?
You know, the women's side, I think Coco Gauff is playing better tennis than anybody else right now. The men's side, Hodar is the name everybody keeps throwing around. I get it, but at this current price, I think he's kind of overbet now. Like, he was 22-1 2 weeks ago, and now he's half that. I kind of think you missed your window. Zverev has not played good tennis. Medvedev has not played good tennis. I think it's worth going a little further down the board, and the two guys I have are also play small wagers on are Menchik and Ogier Aliassime. They're just really good hardcore players, really young-ish players, especially in the case of Menchik, who have had some big match experience and not always looked great in those big matches, but you could see a world where they're both, you know, quarterfinal, semifinalists, and then we'll just kind of assess who's left. Because Alcaraz has not played tennis since April. This is his first tournament back. There's a, like, the most likely path on the men's side is Alcaraz gets a favorable draw. He kind of plays his way into form, and then by the quarterfinals, he's back to, you know, 80-90% of what we're used to seeing from Carlos, and he just wins the tournament because nobody else is that close to him. But He's taken some weird early tournament losses in his career before, and he hasn't played tennis. So like he could get picked off. We don't know who he's going to play yet, right? The draw hasn't come out. But there's some dangerous guys lurking in the draw that aren't exactly seeded that could pick him off. So we'll wait and see what the draw looks like. But Menchik and Felix are the two long shots worth playing. Mensfield, so open. Nobody's playing well. Even Shelton, he's like, what, 8-1? Has not played great tennis this summer. So I'm inclined to think we could get a really surprise champ.
He's a stud. Appreciate a couple minutes. Anthony DeBundo, check him out. Ringer, Ringer Gambling Show, Ringer Wise Guys, all that good stuff. Podcast, Twitch, wherever you get them. Buddy, I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks for having me.
When we come back, AD's right. Dodgers might be vulnerable in the National League. Who's the team we're eyeing? Who are we betting in the futures market? We'll dive into that coming up next.
The NFL preseason ends this week. Who will make the 53-man roster? And who will be working at Home Depot this fall? We've got the surprise cuts and names to watch just a couple weeks from kickoff. Westwood One Sports.
Did you know that driving under the influence of marijuana is illegal? Driving high will get you a DUI. And if you're wondering if law enforcement can tell you're driving high, well, everyone else can. Friends?
I can tell you drove high.
Parents?
I can tell when you drive high.
Relatives?
I can tell. You drove here high, didn't you?
So what makes you think law enforcement can't?
I can tell.
If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI. Paid for by NHTSA.
Right now at O'Reilly Auto Parts, get one free set of Brake Best Select brake pads when you buy two Brake Best Select brake rotors. Or get one free set of Brake Best Select Pro or Import Direct professional grade brake pads when you buy two matching professional grade brake rotors. Restrictions apply. Get details from the parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
As a fitness coach, my active psoriatic arthritis can slow me down. With Skyrizi, Risankizumab Rizza, I'm treating my skin and joint symptoms so I can keep moving. Skyrizi, a prescription-only injection for adults, helps me move with less joint pain, stiffness, swelling, and fatigue. And for those who have plaque psoriasis, 90% clearer skin is possible. With Skyrizi, there's no daily dosing. It's just four doses a year after two starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing like clearer skin and better movement. And that means everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.